Hello, welcome to the Thursday, July 17th, 2014 edition of the Sands and its Storm Center's Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich, and today I'm recording from Stockholm, Germany. We got a great diary by Russ today based on some malware we got from one of our readers, Jake, and that malware was exfiltrating data to China as well. It tends to happen once in a while. The other interesting thing was that apparently part of the files that were used in this attack were actually considered not malicious based on antivirus, and apparently were also somewhat used or distributed at least under legitimate labels. One of the files was even signed with a code signing signature. So what Russ did here, and that's really a neat thing to do if you run into files like this, is to build indicators of compromise that you then can distribute throughout your infrastructure to look for identical files. Now, this approach is a little bit limited in that it only works for the specific identical files based on, for example, MD5 hashes, but if an attacker does use these somewhat questionable files that may be considered non-malicious by some, they actually don't tend to change the MD5 because they do want to match the MD5 of this somewhat legitimate tool. So in those cases, these simple indicators of compromise work pretty well. Russ is using a tool here, Mandiant IOCE, and that's a neat little tool that allows you to create indicators of compromise using standard formats to allow you then to export them to other formats or other tools that will then actually detect them. Great start here, Russ, and Russ promises to work on this the next couple days. He's actually hand on duty for the next 2 days as well, and you should see additional parts to this investigation as he goes through all the tools that Jake submitted. And if you are listening to this podcast, you probably understand by now that cryptography isn't a simple problem. A couple of months ago, with all the Heartbleed issues, OpenSSL was forked a couple of times, and one of the other OpenSSL versions that came out of this was LibreSSL. LibreSSL is now available for Linux as well. Only problem, it doesn't appear to be working quite well, in particular when it comes to the pseudorandom number generator, which of course is always a very difficult problem. Now, at least one of the problems has already been addressed by the LibreSSL team, and that's the problem if your code forks and then expects a new random number. Now, LibreSSL does use the PID to detect whether or not it forked. However, it's possible that the fork of a fork returns back to the same PID, in which case you wouldn't reseed the random number generator and as a result end up with the same random number. Now, like I said, this part has been fixed. However, there are a couple other issues, like for example how def random is used or def urandom in change root jails and such, that are still a little bit odd. Overall, it doesn't look like LibreSSL on Linux is production quality at this point, but that's no big surprise given how young that particular OpenSSL fork is. And large data breaches are back in the news. This time, CNET got compromised. CNET is a very popular tech news website you probably have visited and are one of the about 27 million US unique visitors that CNET claims to have. Now, the good thing here is that many of these visitors don't need to set up an account, so usernames and passwords may not be at risk. They were encrypted or hashed, not really clear how well. The database of all of these usernames and encrypted passwords is for sale for one Bitcoin, but even more importantly, the source code to the website leaked as part of this breach. Apparently, the vulnerability was part of the Symfony PHP framework that CNET uses. Now, they point out it's CNET Vulnerability.com's implementation of this framework, so not sure if the vulnerability was part of a customization done in Symfony for CNET or if this is a generic Symfony vulnerability. And finally, Microsoft came up with an interesting new paper challenging some of the password advice that myself and others have given to users in light of some of these large password breaches. Essentially, what they're pointing out, and that's pretty obvious, is that you cannot possibly have hundreds of hard to remember passwords. So essentially what they're looking at is the trade-off between having a strong password and reusing a password. Essentially what they're sort of proposing, if I understand the paper right, and I didn't have a chance to read it very carefully, is to use different classes of passwords for sort of important and less important accounts instead of having many different passwords. And then they're going through quite a bit of detail in trying to find out sort of what's the optimum number of these passwords, given that the more passwords they have, the less you have, the less complex they will be. Overall, interesting approach. Personally, I do like password safes. One of the problems I have with the different classification of accounts is usually that that classification may not remain constant, and an account that you don't consider as important later will become important. The link to this paper you'll find in the show notes, and that's it for today. Thanks again for listening, and talk to you again tomorrow. Bye.